Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Thank you and welcome to our show. My name is Bruce Norris and today our special guest is John Burns. He's the CEO of John Burns Real Estate Consulting Firm. And he has put together quite a talented team of trusted advisors, and they do service for banks, lenders, builders, developers, investors, and product manufacturers. And it's very, very well-respected business. And on John, actually, I've been amazed at the transformation over the last, 5 years or 6 years as a downturn has occurred. Your business has grown and expanded.
Yeah, well, we've diversified. If I continued hanging out with home builders, I wouldn't have done quite as well.
No. The cheese moved, as they say.
Exactly.
And you moved right along with it. But in doing so, that's had to really expand your knowledge and how things work, I would think.
Yeah, I consider myself very fortunate. I've got a big group of folks. In fact, I had a couple of the guys that are now famous for shorting the subprime thing as clients, and they were teaching me what was going on in the mortgage market. And now I've got the products guys giving me some new issues and more private equity folks. So a lot of smart clients looking at this at different directions, and I just try and pull it all together. And you're one of the smart guys I listen to, too, Bruce. You seem to get it right.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I wouldn't mind hanging around your office a little bit either with that group.
Yeah.
One of the things that's been delaying any kind of normal process of getting back to a good economy is construction's been in the doldrums. And so how important is construction's, resurgence to fixing the unemployment?
Oh, boy, we could talk for an hour on that. This is probably going to stun your listeners right now. One of the biggest issues in the home building industry is a labor shortage.
Wow.
And that sounds almost idiotic given that we're 70-80% off the peak and we're trying to grow again. And we're just finishing up a big research project for two of our clients on this. But there is, in fact, the home builders met with Bernanke last Thursday, and that was their big issue to him, is we're having a labor shortage, and trade labor wages are going up, and Bernanke was ecstatic. But the trades have said they've laid off all their best people. They're paying their folks far less than they used to. And remember, building a home is hard work. You're up on a roof and things. And they're not willing to hire until they can get their rates back up. And their best folks and the people they've known have moved on to other industries and don't really want to come back to housing given the way they got treated and how cyclical they know the business is. So I think what's going to happen here is, I know the numbers. We've lost 1.46 million construction jobs nationally in residential construction.
Okay.
We've only gained 40,000 of them back.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Drop in the bucket. My granddaughter, just to kind of support what you were saying, my granddaughter was in a sort of a summer program where she was in a small town in Texas, or not a giant one anyway, and I forget the name of it offhand, but anyway, it was an oil town. And even while I was there picking her up, there was somebody that asked the church to put them up for a weekend because there was no place to stay. And I thought, well, there must be a housing boom going on here. And they said, nope. Everybody that comes here thinking they're going to stay in construction goes to the oil fields because they pay twice as much.
Right.
So they could have one heck of a building boom, but they can't put it together.
Yeah, and I heard that, especially in Texas and Arizona, there's been a lot of people who've left for the oil industry and are not coming back.
Yeah. I mean, they're getting paid $100,000 to start when they don't know anything.
Right.
When construction does get going, what other categories of jobs does it help along? Is manufacturing one of those benefactors?
Definitely. And what's very interesting is if you look at the publicly traded product manufacturers, they're reporting their U.S. sales are up 5 to 7%. And they're scratching their heads, going, well, the public home builders are up 20 to 30. Why are we only up 5 to 7? That's part of this labor lag here. The builders are selling the homes, but they're not ordering the materials because they don't have anybody to put them in.
Wow.
So there will be a lag here. We think it's about a 9-month lag. But they will see a benefit. And then The other part of this that's part of a construction recovery, but the recovery we're going through is we're going to transition to more and more, I'll call them real buyers instead of investors. And the real buyers go out and spend way more money. They'll spend money on furniture. They'll go to Crate and Barrel and Target and Sears and those places. So you'll see a lot of ancillary businesses see their revenue grow 1% to 2% per year, which for retailers like that is a big, big move. Once we start to see the housing market come back, which we are seeing.
And how does commercial occupancy get helped?
Well, that's totally job growth.
Okay, so construction.
Construction. You'll see the architects will start hiring again. You know, I think the lawyers have fared pretty well during this whole time. but there are a lot of service firms to the industry that will start hiring again. I know a lot of these guys, and when I go to their offices, they're only half full. So you'll see. A lot of companies will really benefit, and it'll help the economy overall.
Now, one of the things that's interesting to me is, of course, you know, you'll see the news headlines, well, construction's up, whatever, 20%, but then you have to look at the chart and go, okay, well, never mind. It's off of a number that almost doesn't exist.
Right.
Riverside had one of those. It was sort of like up 30% and hit the news, and I looked at how many homes were built and said, okay, that was actually a rise of 8 houses. And you just go, okay, that doesn't mean much. But one of the things that I think a lot of people have difficulty is saying, okay, you know, where we will inevitably be in a very short period of time. And we just sort of talked about it off air. I mean, honestly, we have 1 month supply of inventory in Riverside, and yet our lot or subdivision creation is 95% off of its peak. Those two don't match to me.
Well, what it means is prices are going to go up, right?
It has to. It has to until it makes sense. You know, it'll pencil. But I would think we are going to have a price run because one of the things is you have policies that took us from 6 months to 1 month of inventory. Those policies haven't changed.
Right.
And now we're at 1 month of inventory. I don't know how we go back to 6 months of inventory with the policies in place.
So I don't either.
So,
I mean, the only way we do is we have some sort of recession and everybody pulls back.
Well, what's interesting about that is, and again, off air, we talked a little bit about, you could have a recession and you'd end up with maybe even a lower interest rate, something that starts with a 2. But in California, you're oddly enough blessed with an abundance of former owners that would save $500 a month going from renter to owner again. And FHA will let them do it.
No, you're right. That's why I don't think we'll see prices fall for that reason. I think if you saw a recession, there'd be more skittishness amongst some people than others. And even, you know, if they screw up this whole fiscal cliff and debt crisis, I've got one client in particular who's very well known who invests in real estate all over the world, and he thinks that would cause a global recession, and the biggest safe haven would be distressed real estate in the United States.
Well,
even if that happened, you could see more foreign capital flow in here to real estate.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because, you know, you deal with these hedge funds, and all of a sudden single-family homes for the first time in my memory have become a target.
Right.
And to me, that's kind of a market maker change. They are buying enough homes, so they are affecting the prices, the inventory, but also the rental market.
Right. And these guys chart everything, and the chart that they love points to you got to invest in distressed real estate. And where they love it when it's below replacement cost.
I was going to say that has to be the key right there.
Yeah, but you can have all sorts of arguments about what's replacement cost. Do you include land? Do you not include land? So we're having some of those arguments right now. The interesting thing for me is that they've clearly driven prices up, particularly amongst the distressed real estate, to the point now, and depending on your definition, they're not really trading below replacement cost anymore. And so are they going to have the discipline to stop buying, or have they created a little bit of a mini bubble here? And I shouldn't even really call it a bubble because the affordability is so fantastic. You know, will they ride the wave that I think is going to happen in home price appreciation? It sounds like you're going to happen. You think it's going to happen too.
Yeah, I don't see how it can. And again, when you have a 3.25% interest rate, you get these other dominoes that play out, and you start thinking about what does that cost monthly. And CARP comes out with reports, and they talk about if you were in the Inland Empire, you're about, you'd say $550 per month going from renter to owner. But if you extrapolate that in dollar terms, what that, the prices could go up, how many dollars for you before you hit that 550, it's 127 grand.
Yeah, those are big numbers.
Yeah, and that's what I think we're sort of looking at it as the way the comeback normally works, and I think we're going to get surprised. I think you know Sean O'Toole from Foreclosure Radar. He and I went back to Washington, D.C. for 3 days to do research at the Library of Congress. So two nerds were looking at microfiche for 3 days, and it was fun. But one of the things that we wanted to do was check, because sometimes we hear, well, interest rates are the lowest in the last 50 years, that type of thing. So I can definitely confirm that the interest rates on mortgages have never been this low any time in the 1900s, which is pretty amazing.
That's a pretty good time, yeah.
So, yeah.
Prices are the same as they were 11, 12 years ago. What does that tell you you should do?
Yeah. On the monthly cost, I mean, that's the thing. And this is sort of the bargain of all times, no doubt about it. When you were talking about below replacement cost, and certainly when somebody starts to think about actually writing a check for a piece of land, they have to count everything. So
right.
In Riverside County, I mean, I think one of the problems, we don't have subdivision creation because you couldn't make a case that would have penciled tomorrow.
Right.
So how far away do you think we are, like in price movement, before somebody would say, you know what, we need 100 lots somewhere?
Well, there's plenty of demand in the better submarkets like Chino and the Dairylands and Rancho Cucamonga, and we're even hearing a lot of transactions down at Lake Elsinore. So if the land price is right, it can make sense. It's when you get up to the high desert like Victorville that people say forget it. Or there's a lot of land where the landowner is just not distressed and saying, I'm not going to sell it to you for the price that you can make money at. I'm going to wait. So I think that's a big part of this, too, is that we have far fewer distressed land sellers than everybody thought we would. You know, we thought it would be the RTC all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, the farmers and other land sellers just didn't have too much debt or saved enough cash that they've been able to hold on to their investments.
I wonder if they had sort of sold under an option, got the option money, and then the people backed out, and they probably got a pile of money they never thought they'd get in the first place.
That's exactly right, and they're continuing to farm land or whatever they're doing with it.
Yeah, and they have residual money now. They can pay the taxes, and they're more comfortable than ever. Interesting.
Exactly.
when a developer takes a piece of land and he ends up with a building lot, so he goes from even a flat surface to where he has streets and sewers and all that, I'm sure you have some idea of what that costs to get there.
But I'm not going to quote it.
Okay, because it's too many variables?
It varies a lot.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. But it's certainly a lot of money. And then I guess I wanted to know also, California's permit structure cost, is it higher than other states?
No, it's absurd.
Okay.
And I know because somebody did a study a while ago on the city of Carlsbad. It was north of $110,000 a home just in permit fees.
Good grief.
City of Carlsbad.
Good grief.
Exactly.
Well, you can build a house in Texas for that.
Yeah, you can sell the home for less than that.
That's right.
And make money.
Yeah. Okay.
And that is a big change here, too, that is going to inhibit construction is while the cost of building the home and putting in the streets has come down dramatically because the trades have had to lower their prices, the permitting costs and the regulatory hurdles have gone through the roof.
Right.
Clients complain to me all the time about the changes at the Army Corps of Engineer, and heck, if this property had a puddle on it for 30 days, it's now a protected wetland, and it's getting ridiculous.
Well, that's going to be... It'll be much harder to play catch-up if we get behind, and I think we're behind, unless you can tell me different. Do we have tons of available building lots if we end up...
No, that is the... I spoke at an event last night in San Diego, and that was the number one complaint about everybody. Because I told them I thought sales would double over the next 4 years. John, we just don't have the lots. And I'm saying, look, I'm talking about you getting back to 2003 volumes, 2007 volumes, and heck, if you just start selling four a month instead of two and a half a month, you're, you know, two-thirds of the way there. But they are just telling me, John, the lots do not exist, at least profitable lots.
Yes. Well, I would think existing lots would be very, very good to stock up on.
Yeah, and even they were talking about raw land. I mean, there's no raw land that's entitled for development that I can touch at given today's home prices.
Correct. Yeah, that's what's interesting about this. Normally, we have a cycle that's very different, where you have construction improve the job picture, and then the job picture improves so much we get migration, and all of that kind of goes in that sequence. This time, we're going to pretend we don't have anything for sale, and that's almost what it is, because the idea that the shadow inventory was going to show up in such quantity, it was going to, you know, create another downturn. From my seat, I look at every policy they're deciding on, and none of that enters into the MLS and ends up for sale. So they have bulk sales of property, bulk sales of notes. The hedge funds that are buying properties are sending those into rentals for years.
Right.
So where's the glut of properties going to show up? I just don't think it is.
Yeah, those people were totally wrong. And you know, we've been wrong on a lot of things, but we were right on that. I mean, we thought this would play out over 4 or 5 years. Actually, the only great data we were able to find out in across the entire country was here in Southern California, where the RERC, which is kind of an appraisal organization, collected good foreclosure data in the 90s, and you saw it bleeded out over years. And then we found a few executives in the bank servicing businesses who said, John, you don't understand. If they mandated we foreclose on these people and sell these homes, we can't, because we have to document everything, and we can't even keep our software up to date with the documentation requirements. And now every state is changing the rules on Bank of America, so they have to rewrite their rules for California and Nevada and Florida.
Right.
There was no way they could process the paperwork. And what it is doing, though, but you brought this up, is it's telling them sell the loan.
Exactly.
You can sell the portfolio. You can sell a portfolio of loans, and even though you'll make less revenue at the end of the day, you're going to lose less, because it's just going to take you forever to take it through REO.
Right, and they have then they sell it at a discount to where a company like Carrington can go talk to the owners, and it never becomes an REO.
So Bank of America, or not to pick on them, but the bank can't cut your principal 20% because it's morally hazardous to them, and they think it's ridiculous. But they'll sell the loan at 60 cents on the dollar to somebody who will then cut your principal 20% because they just now made money doing it.
Right. I kind of laughed at the B of A first did a mailer to people that were behind and had credit lines, and it was an offer to reduce their principal, but I think they got a 7% response rate on the mailer. So the next mailer they sent out was 150,000 credit lines were forgiven completely. And the letter said that unless we hear from you in 30 days, it's enacted. So they didn't need a response. But
they should thank the bank, because if that happened in January, that'd be taxable income maybe, right?
Well, that's right. You know, that's the thing. You know, you bring up a good point, is that we're all sitting here going, you guys are going to make a decision, right? I mean, the worst decision would probably be no decision on a lot of these things that have come up. And one of them, you're talking about the ability to not pay tax on forgiven debt.
Right.
That would be not a good thing for California, for sure.
That would hurt for a lot of people.
Yeah, that it's kind of in the short sale craze, and that's about the only craze we got going on.
I wonder if the IRS would really pursue that. We'll find out, maybe.
Well, one of the easier things with that is that you don't have to do a bankruptcy to get rid of that, which I don't think you could anyway, but you can do insolvency. And insolvency is much simpler, so I'm kind of familiar with just that process, because I asked my tax lady what happens. So it's a little easier, but still, that probably doesn't make sense. But if everybody knows it's going to get passed, why would you wait to December 31st to do it?
Right.
It's kind of silly. What's your take on the fiscal cliff? You know, the raising taxes. It doesn't seem like it's going to probably have an early resolution, but what do you think ultimately the resolution would be, and what kind of impacts to the benefits that we've assumed will continue for real estate?
I think they're just going to continue to play chicken with each other, and right up until the deadline.
Yeah.
And see who gives first, and then Geithner actually can extend this through all these fancy shenanigans all the way until February or March.
Okay.
So wouldn't surprise me to see us in that period too. Then I think they're going to do something that looks like they at least solved the problem for 12 months, and we'll be back at it again next year. That's my biggest guess. The problems are so huge. They're not even really tackling the major problems here. They're just trying to tackle this year's problem. But this is just one big U.S. financial crisis, and the U.S. balance sheet has to collapse at some point. Have you read Reinhard and Rogoff's book?
Sure.
This time is different.
Yeah.
There's 800 years of financial history and tons of companies that every single one of them, at some point, the investment community has lost confidence in the government and said, you know what, I'm just not going to buy your debt anymore. And then, Bernanke can't control interest rates. When that happens, it could go through the roof.
Yeah, he can't control long term. If people's sentiment turns against that, that's for sure.
Yeah, he can control what the banks borrow at, but when China and everybody else stops buying our debt, who's going to buy it? And they're going to want a 10 or 12% return to do so.
Yeah, well, what's interesting about remember somewhere about a year ago we had a credit downgrade. And then the 10-year went from basically 2.5 to 1.5. And,
right.
I was surprised by that. I kind of thought, okay, well, now we've got a little problem. But we're the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry. I mean, it's just everyone else has got a situation that's even worse than ours.
Well, a lot of Europe does, but I don't think the whole world does.
Okay.
The unfunded, in fact, there was a really good article by Chris Cox and Bill Archer in the November 30th Wall Street Journal that laid it out pretty nicely. And Mary Meeker wrote a really great report you probably read called USA Inc. It's like a sell-side report on the U.S. balance sheet. But according to Cox and Archer, there's $62 trillion in off-balance sheet liabilities for Medicare and Social Security.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not even being discussed here. What we're worried about is our $16 trillion debt. Well, we've got four times that off balance sheet. If we were going to do the accounting right, we've really got 80 plus trillion in debt
that we already are committed to pay and aren't going to have.
Well, and borrowing from their article here, we're running $1 trillion a year deficit. They claim that we're accruing about $7 trillion a year for future Medicare and Social Security liabilities. And if you take all the income of all the people in the United States and all the businesses in the United States, it's only $7 trillion. So even if you tax us at 100%, it doesn't cover it.
Well, it looks like they're going to give it a shot. When you do, it's interesting. One of the reports I wrote, it kind of forced me to take a look at the tax structure. And on one of the years, and I don't remember which one, we had capital gains actually equal to the highest personal rate. And revenue in that segment went down, and as a matter of fact, it has never recovered. It has never again collected the same percentage of taxes than it did prior to that law change.
Interesting.
So some of those, let's get money from the rich. If you don't do it correctly, the rich don't have to sell something. They just say, forget it. Or they 1031 exchange or do something.
Or they hire one less person next year.
Yeah, then that's exactly right. Or they let people work 30 hours instead of 40.
Right.
That's what's going on right now. I have, people telling me that there's stores. I remember being in a line about 15 people long, and we've only got 30 seconds, but at a drugstore. And I got up to the front. I said, that's the first time I've ever seen this. And she says, well, what they did is they let go about 30% of the staff, and then the rest of us only get 30 hours. So they literally don't have a full-time employee in the store, so they don't have to pay any kind of medical stuff. So I guess that's one way to skin the cat. Well, we've entered this first segment. We've been with John Burns, and he's the CEO of John Burns Consulting Services in Orange County. And John, we'll pick this up in just the next segment.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show.
For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.